And it is great to be back once again for the 357th time, the Parish of the Patriots. Grandpa Dan with you, of course, as always. Glad you tuned in this week. We, as always, we're looking to have a thought-provoking show. Interesting, entertaining discussion. As always, we'll have our Christian-specific segment somewhere around the halfway point of the show. Hope you'll stick around for that. If you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. But if you do get something out of the show, I've got snail mail. That's it. You don't be shy. Pay those tithes. But there's only one way to do it. And that's an envelope in the mail. The Bitcoin addresses. Those are all Sven's. Just look on the description page here. We write out a little summary of what this show is about, or whichever of these shows. And the snail mail address is there. That's what I got. So, I don't do cryptocurrency or any of that other business. With that having been said, 1 minute into the show, we're ready to go to the listener supporter mailbag. Let's see what we got here, because I'm finally getting Christmas cards. Post office is running at breakneck speed. My Christmas cards are finally showing up. Radio Albion, Sven is back. And happy. I've enjoyed the many interviews about the experience of incarceration. Learning about how he grew spiritually would be helpful as well. Question, is misgendering someone considered a carnal sin? In Christ, that's from R&G. I always put it that way. As always, I protect y'all's anonymity. I'll pass that along to Sven if he wants to get into a discussion, or maybe take some time on one of his daily nationalists, perhaps, to discuss the spiritual aspect, because I know there's that definitely fits in into the equation. As to the misgendering question, I'm not sure how to take that. If we're being ironic, a little humorous here, don't want to take something seriously. That's a stab at humor. I will say this: a man is a man, a woman is a woman. That ain't going to change. We hold to the truth. That's it. At the end of the day, we hold to the truth. What is the truth? If you look, we don't have to worry. Even if everybody tells you something's wrong, you're being whatever. If you're speaking in the truth, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about. We don't have to be apologetic for the truth. We just don't. If what you speak is the truth, if what you're saying is the truth, it doesn't matter if people are offended. I'm not saying go out there and be offensive just to be offensive. But if it's demanded that you call a man a woman or a woman a man or whatever, and you don't do that and they're offended, who cares? You're speaking the truth. The power of the truth is so... Look at the way in which this society is constantly pressuring us to go along with lies. And the lies vary. I mean, there are a lot. When people were pressured, for instance, during COVID to wear the mask, and everybody knew that was BS, well, most people knew, that's BS. The masks aren't going to prevent anything. And yet people go along with it anyway. Just pressure to go along with an obvious lie. You have the people that believe the lies, and they're almost irrelevant. When the real goal is to get those of us who don't believe in the lie to submit to it anyway. See, that's the real win, because it's a lie and you choose to go along with it. It was really, COVID is one of those events that is just really telling to me. It is really telling about, human nature, what people do in the context of the spiritual aspect of this. And we get into obviously in the Christian specific segment, we get into the spiritual aspect of the things of the world around us a lot. Today, I'm sure, will be no exception. But the goal, like for instance, during COVID, but you can apply it to any of these other lies they put out there. The goal isn't even so much to get the people who believe the BS to go, they're almost irrelevant. The real win is getting those of us who know it's bullshit to pretend as though it's not. because we want to go along. We want to get along. We make the decision to reject the truth and to take on their lie. Remember, the truth is always Christ related. The topic is irrelevant. If they're pressuring you to deny the truth and parrot back a lie, it's on a certain level a denial of Christ, because Christ is truth. I mean, he is, the truth is an innate part of him. He is the way, the truth, and life. If you deny the truth knowing better because you want to go along with the lie, because that's easier, that's the real win. Not the morons who actually believe the obvious lie. I've said that many times over a lot of these narratives. They intentionally make it stupid, you know. And like I said, COVID's a great example of that, because there were so many different aspects of that, but you can apply it anywhere. And they tell these obvious stupid lies. I mean, it's obviously a lie, and it's stupid on purpose. Because if you will go along with it and parrot that back and reject the truth, that is a testimony against yourself. Again, I don't want to get into the spiritual stuff too much early on in the show, but you can't. There's always a spiritual element to it. It really is. Let's see what else. Got another Christmas card here. And I got to say, this Christmas card here, this is the prettiest Christmas card I think I've ever seen. It's really very nice. Thoughts and prayers always with you, kinsmen. Happy Christmas, Dan and family. All the best for 26. That's from Red Pilled in Vienna. And like I say, this is a pretty card. It's almost a shame when you get a pretty card, because you want to keep them. How long can you keep a card? But those are really nice. And yeah, I appreciate it. I hope all of you had a good Christmas. 2026 is crazy. We're like a week or so into this thing. It's been absolutely off the wall. This is going to be a crazy year. Well, this past year was crazy enough, and it's just going to keep getting crazier. We had a discussion, Friday at Daily Nationalist, Sven Longshanks and I, about one of those stories. He picks the stories out. And it actually wound up being really, I think, a really good discussion. We got in some really good topics on a story that's, it's kind of the sort of thing you expect out of a place like the UK. But if you didn't get a chance to check it out, it's good to check it out. And I always get off into, I tend to get off into these side tangents and kind of did on the show about, you know, these things they're doing and the things they're pushing. But yeah, if you didn't get a chance to check that out, you might want to check it out. I think it came out pretty good. But I mean, one of the things I kind of got off into was the failed nature of the system and how utterly corrupt it is. And this is one of the things I can't help but to keep observing. And I see, I don't know, people are so frustrated, and yet they don't know the answer. They don't know the answer, so they keep trying to bang their head against the wall and do the same thing. And they're getting more and more frustrated. You see this across society as a whole. And yet you still have people trying to cheerlead Team R, Team D, and all of this. They don't have the answers. I think one of the key elements of our Christian specific segment is getting to the answers. It really, if you don't listen to that segment, that is the answer to the what can you do? What can we do? What should we be doing? That is the answer. So if you've been skipping that, you've been missing out. I see all this clown worldry going on around us, and yet people still be saying stuff like, we got to vote these people out. I didn't vote this last election, and man, am I glad I didn't. You know, at the time, people were like, I can't believe it. You're not going to go vote. You got to go vote for Trump. And now these same people are like, man, what the hell? What happened? I said this before, when you vote, what you're voting for, you're signing off on the system. You are accepting that as legitimate. That's what all you're really voting for. The outcomes can be predetermined. So your participation is signing off on your own legitimacy of it, you know, on the system rather, your own, you're accepting the terms and conditions. When you don't vote, you're not accepting any of it. You're saying this ain't legit. And now people with this question of what can we do? What can we do? And I see these setups going on out there. And Marjorie Taylor Greene came out and put up a post on Twitter or whatever, and something along the lines of this country's ready for a tax revolt, implying that you shouldn't go out and pay your income taxes this year. And this is something I've been seeing bots, shills, whatever, posting in comments. And you do you. You know, if you're a listener and you're of that mind, I don't have any control over you. You do you. I don't care. But when I see people putting something like that out, and I'm thinking, Charlottesville wasn't enough. January 6th wasn't enough. You got another obvious setup being pushed, and people are going to fall for it. We need a tax revolt. People need to just quit paying. They refuse to pay. For starters, anything that starts off with, if everybody would just, that's not a real plan, because everybody's not going to just. They're just not. If everybody just quit paying their income taxes, they'd have to listen to us. No, they're not. They're going to crack down on you like they always do. But nevertheless, you have somebody like that, a politician coming out and saying, we need tax revenue. Everybody just need to refuse to pay their income taxes. Well, everybody's not going to, for starters. And what is that going to entail? Everything, they're building a profile on you. Everything you put on social media, comments you put on YouTube videos, all of that, they're building profiles on you. And they're, you know, like this whole thing with these flock cameras are going up everywhere. You know, why is that? You know, they're increasing the surveillance stage. And it's really creepy because these flock cameras are going up everywhere. And then when people notice them, like the government, the local governments will act like, well, we don't know. We don't know where those came from. Well, they're on public property. Well, of course, you know where they came from. You couldn't just go out yourself putting up secure, you know, cameras everywhere. They'd make you take them down. I think they're really getting set for civil unrest. I think that's really where what these things are pointing to. And they're building profiles on everybody. They're running it through this AI. I think this AI thing is this something they've had a long time. I was thinking about a case of this. A little kind of quasi-personal antidote here. But I've heard it put out there in conspiracy type circles. And this is one of those things I agree with. The AI is something they've had a long time. They're just starting to release it among the public so people get used to that idea. And I tend to believe that. And here's why. Years ago, there's a place in the vicinity, and they make stuff for the oil field. And one of the key things they do is they make explosives, you know, to use for drilling wells or whatever. I don't know the mechanics of it. But everybody has always referred to this business locally. The people always refer to this business as, quote unquote, the bomb plant. That's just what people call it. They call it the bomb plant. And somebody was telling me a long time ago, for years, back when people all used landlines still, you know, people in their conversations with each other would, you know, talk about, oh, yeah, that happened out by the bomb plant. Oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so, he lives over by the bomb plant. And like the local law enforcement kept getting basically calls from the feds, you know, that, you know, something about there's a bomb plant in your area. Well, and they'd have to tell them, no, that's just what people call this. And I remembered that. And this was way before any AI stuff was announced to the public. Well, somebody wasn't sitting around listening to everyone's phone calls. So how did they know people were talking all these phone traffic about a bomb plant going through the AI? But anyway, that's a little off topic, but that's just something I thought of the other day. And I think that kind of points to the fact that they've had this a long time. Point is, they're building profiles. Be careful what you post. people, and I see people recklessly posting stuff, sometimes so reckless to the point I think maybe they're bought a shill or something trying to goad people. Anyway, Marjorie Taylor Greene comes out, is a fairly prominent person, talking about a tax revolt, basically saying people should quit paying their income taxes. And that'll make the politicians start totally doing what you want them to do instead of what the real president Netanyahu wants you to do. Or rather, wants them to do. That all that's going to happen, because it's sad because a certain number of people are going to believe that. And there's no faster way to get flagged in the system than to just quit paying taxes. That will flag you in their system. Again, not everyone's going to do it. It's, you know, there'll be a percentage of the people that will do that. And all that's going to happen, they'll wait. And, you know, then you're going to get the letter and they're going to make your life miserable. Maybe take all your shit and throw you in jail. This is the reality of it. And it's disingenuous. Because if Marjorie Taylor Greene really wanted to attack the system, she wouldn't come out and encourage people to not pay their income taxes, which, again, the only outcome of that's going to be they're just going to have a certain amount of people make the list and get thrown in jail and or lose all their property and go through the headache of a audit. If she really wanted to, if she was really encouraging a citizen's rebellion that would make the government, the politicians, stop in their tracks and maybe go, oh, shit, we're going to do something, it wouldn't be that. If she had come out and said, everybody just needs to go out and file for bankruptcy and just default on their credit card bills. Hell, forget the bankruptcy. Just quit paying your credit cards. That attacks the root cause. If everybody, you could even go out, if half the population went out and just filed for bankruptcy, said piss on it and quit paying their credit. Because if you file for bankruptcy, you may not know this. If you file for bankruptcy, the first thing your bankruptcy lawyer will tell you when you go in and say, okay, I want to file for bankruptcy, the first thing they're going to tell you to do is quit paying your credit card bills. You're wasting your money. We're filing for bankruptcy. Don't worry about it. Just quit paying. They can't do anything. It's unsecured debt. Just quit paying it. Quit using them. They'll also tell you that. Quit using them so they can't accuse you of fraud. But yeah, no, quit paying it. If Marjorie Taylor Greene came out and told everybody, quit paying that, just go down and see your bankruptcy lawyer and file for bankruptcy or just default on your unsecured credit card debt. Now, that would make the system go stand up and take notice. Instead, she promotes something like, oh, just quit paying your income taxes. What could go wrong? 100% she paying her income tax. That's how disingenuous it is. Like I said, it's kind of reminded me, you know, when you come to see the setups, you get it, you know. Like I say, Charlottesville, January 6th. And then when I see something like this, it's another setup. Look at how many people, whether you talk about January 6th or whether you talk about Charlottesville, how many people had their lives ruined? How many people got thrown in prison, lost their jobs, lost their businesses, had their families destroyed because of the stress of the situation? And yet, in both cases, all the people that organized the events, they're just fine. Hell, they're still on, you know, they're still out there doing their thing. Isn't that weird? Don't fall for it. I'm not. I can smell that setup from a mile away. 100%. There will be a certain percentage of people listen to that nonsense and face the consequences for it. And she won't. Guarantee she's not. It all harkens back to this misconception. And this is why at the beginning of the show, I brought up the talk I had with Sven, because I brought it up then too. You're not going to fix this system. You're not going to save it. You're going to turn it around. You're going to make it work for yourself. Once you understand that and accept that, the best thing you can do is withdraw your consent to the system. And again, I'm done voting. I didn't vote for Trump. And now all these people that voted for Trump and regret it, I don't have any regrets because I didn't fall for it. because the system itself, it ain't even about Trump. It doesn't matter what the candidate is. You're going to get to, it's so funny to see these Team D cheerleaders now, like, haha, y'all voted for Trump. Now you really regret it. Like, anything different would be going on if a Team D president was in there. You know, it's weird how they have this weird, I don't know, lack of memory. You know, they'll criticize, they'll go on, correctly so. They'll criticize the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians, but they act like that started as soon as Trump got in there. Like that wasn't, hasn't been going on. You know, you remove your consent. Stop consenting to the system. Stop giving it legitimacy. Yes, I pay my income tax. I've already filed. But I'm in the process of filing. I pay my income taxes because I ain't, you know, that's not a form of consenting to the system. You know, if a friend comes up and says, hey, can I borrow your car? I make that decision, yes or no. If I'm walking down the street, get caught unaware, and someone points a gun in my face with their finger on the trigger and say, give me your keys or I'm going to blow your head off, I'm probably going to give them my keys. It's not the same. It's not the same as my friend or neighbor saying, can I borrow your vehicle? I got to run to the store real quick. And I make that, because if somebody points a gun in your face, you got no choice. That's how I pay my taxes. I ain't going to sit here telling anybody, don't pay your income taxes. Somebody's pointing a gun in your face. You make the smart choice. I said, with flock cameras and all the rest of it, you see these signs that they're really preparing for civil unrest. I think that's coming. Pretty widespread civil unrest. And I think what a lot of these things are, they're trying to pick off enough of these elements to where the civil unrest winds up being manageable. If that makes sense. And it doesn't matter which team you're cheerleading for. You know, Trump picking off, basically shutting down and going after the anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian protests, which, let's be honest, those are chiefly among the quote-unquote left-leaning college student demographic. They went after them. Team R over here, MAGA cult over here, cheerleading that. Yeah, get those crazy commies or whatever, shut them down. This encouraging people that are dissatisfied with stuff Trump's doing, that are maybe Trump supporters at some point, getting them to involve themselves in not paying their income taxes. A certain amount of people fall for that. They're going to be over here. In other words, they're sidelining enough elements here that they can manage, because if they leave those elements alone, and civil unrest blows up, those elements, regardless of which side of the so-called spectrum, political spectrum they're on, can bring enough pressure, and then the mob will feed into it that they can't manage it. So you get rid of the anti-Israel protesters at the colleges. You get rid of the MAGA people that are dissatisfied with MAGA turning into MIGA. And you start citing, you know, the nationalists, the communists, you get enough of these elements that could really bring enough accelerant civil unrest. You sideline those people so that when it does break out, you can manage, they can manage what there is. I mean, that's the way I read it in. That's the way I read this into it. I said this before, earlier last year. You know, when Trump started doing this whole thing with the ICE agents going out, and people were cheerleading that, you know, the ICE agents going out and snatching randos off the street. This is what I voted for. Hell yeah. And, you know, I'm not the only one, but there were those of us, you know, who were publicly, like on this show, I was saying at the time, what they're doing is they're normalizing the idea of ski masks wearing federal agents grabbing people off the street and shoving them in a van and disappearing them. Because they're telling you that's an illegal alien. You cheer it on. How do you even know it is? Maybe that's somebody that's been complaining a little too much about Israel. You know, maybe it's an anti-Semite. I mean, you only know what they tell you. And you cheerlead it on. Because I don't like those people. It's in other words, I said the whole point of that operation, because it's not about deporting people. That's like the most ridiculous form of deportation you could do. Is you're going to grab people one at a time, shove them in a van in front of TV cameras and make a big news story of it. That's not a deportation. That's a joke. All that was, that's just normalizing in people's minds. They get normalized to the idea. If you popped up 10 years ago and put federal agents on the street and just start grabbing people off the street, it would raise panic in the public. Now it's normalized. You know, people still argue or debate about it, but it's normalized. Once it becomes normalized, it's no different than if it's always been that way. That's just how people are. It's easy to do. This is the game. The team RTD, the team R, team D, it's all part of the game. You know, we just had this thing last week to where, you know, that woman up in Minneapolis got shot by the ICE agents. And it's pretty typical. I have rude terms that I use, and I'm not going to use them here. This is kind of typical unhinged behavior that you see from law enforcement authorities, with this just looking for an excuse to mag dump on somebody. And you have the cops jump out of an unmarked vehicle. And what I hear initially is he's screaming for her to get out of the road, and she starts moving her car. Then he runs over and grabs the door and starts yanking on it, telling her to get the F out of the car. And this other cop brilliantly goes and stands in front of the car. Then when she turns her wheels to get away, he starts mag dumping in the car. And people are like, well, you know, and the woman in question, they killed her. The woman in question is kind of your typical shit lib protester. You know, they made it a point that we knew that, by the way. You know, she's a lesbian and she was out protesting ICE. So if you're Team MAGA, you're supposed to cheerlead this on. But how far are we from, oh, that person? Right now, the narrative is that person was interfering with deporting illegals. We're, I would say, just stepping back, top of my head, we're half to one step away from that person was an anti-Semite that criticized Israel too much. You put the team D, put team D in there, and it goes the other direction. That's the problem. It's not, oh, you're just defending those people who hate us. No, it's not that. It's seeing where they're going with this. You're going to be on the receiving end. You could potentially be on the receiving end of it real soon. And yes, no, when you're on the receiving end, those same idiots that are bitching about it now will be cheerleading it when it happens to you. This is how the only way to win the game is to quit playing it. That's what I'm saying. People that are cheerleading it because it happened to a shit lib, wait a few years and it's happening to them. And then the shit libs who are right now in the street protesting and outraged, they'll cheerlead it. That's what those Nazis get. You can't win this game. Just don't. The only way to win is to not play. Talking about that incident, isn't it real curious? They shoot and kill this woman. Protests break out the next day all over the country. And as always, as expected, it amazes me that so many people, y'all do, because when I say so many people, I'm not talking about y'all, but the people you know, the people in general, when you look out around. Isn't it real funny? This, I'm not saying it was funny they shot the lady. They shoot this woman. The next day, there's massive protests break out all across the country. And these protests will no doubt grow. And the first thing I notice when they're showing clips of these protests is all these ready-made, professionally made signs, good to go. If you wanted to have a, say you wanted to order 1,000 signs protesting whatever, fill in the blank, doesn't matter. If you're going to put in an order for 1,000 signs to be made up, it's going to take, at minimum, I would guess, several weeks. But isn't it real funny? Like the next day, there's all these people in the streets with their professionally made signs they're holding up marching down the street. It's almost like they were ready, isn't it? Just almost like they had everything set in place, just ready, drop the hammer, just ready to have it going. How do you organize a protest in less than 24 hours? How do you do that? Hell, try to organize a family reunion and you have to spend a year doing that shit. And that's dealing with family that you have personal contact with. Organize a protest less than 24 hours and you can get thousands of people out on the street with their professionally made signs. I'm telling you, you can't win at this game. Quit playing. It's a trick. Remove yourself from the game. Quit consenting to the system. You're not going to fix it. They don't care what you think. You're not going to protest and they're going to listen to you. That doesn't happen and people keep doing it. Remove your consent. That's the only way to win the game is to not play it. Anyway, we need to get in the Christian specific segment. I already tell we're going to run long today. I don't want to run too long trying to. Because now Sven's back, we actually have a radio schedule again. So I have to make these shows more or less fit into the hour time slot. And it can throw things off when I go long. So, yeah, we're going to have to get into the Christian specific segment. We're already off to a bad start. I can't talk. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, as it were, here at the Parish of the Patriots. Well, I'm glad we got here to the Christian-specific segment. Congratulations to all of you for keeping your sanity for one more week. The craziness of this clown world we live in. I'm really interested, and I think this is the focus of the show, in the spiritual aspect. As you all know, this has really become the focus of the show, is understanding the spiritual aspect. We do the Christian-specific segment because I really think this is the most important. Don't get me wrong. I put my best effort into the first part of the show. But this is what I think is the key element. And I like to think this is what sets a show apart. This is what makes a show a little different and whatever. And that's, again, I'm not elevating this above anybody else's work, but they're just saying this is what makes it a little bit different, is we seek to understand things. You know, I always say you'll never understand what's going on in this world if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of it. I mean, and people get close. They understand a lot of different elements that go into the world. And then at the same time, I'll see people go on about something and, again, not understand the spiritual aspect of it. You know, and then it gets off into different little groups that work for the devil, for Satan, you know. And if we understand the spiritual aspect, we understand why things are happening. We are in the end of days. I'm not one of these evangelical death cultists that are just obsessed with the end of days. You know, it's crazy to me how they act, like, you know, how these people act like Jesus is, I don't know, a game. The return of Jesus Christ is a game or a form of some sort, you know. And if they just check off all of the boxes on the form, they can make Jesus come back. You know, they support Israel because they think that that's one of the things. They support this modern nation state, this abomination in the Middle East. They support that because they think that is one of the elements, the puzzle pieces they have to put together to make Jesus come back. Like, the decision for Jesus to come back is up to them. Like, they can coerce him into coming back if we support Israel and we do this, 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 and this. Then that's going to force Jesus to come back. Once we fill in all the requirements, we can make Jesus come back. It really is like a death cult, because cults do these insane, you know, these weird rituals, and they think if they do all of these things, they can make this happen. You know, Jesus will return at the appointed time. Jesus himself said, you're not going to know the day or the hour. And yet these people act like they basically do. If we fill in all the requirements, we can make him show up. They obsess they're always looking for the Antichrist. I'm in my late 50s, and my whole life I from being a kid back in the 70s, I was listening. You would hear people talk about, you know, this, that, or the other is the Antichrist. You know, some dude that's been long dead now. When he was alive, he was the Antichrist, and it's still there today. Trump is the Antichrist. Putin is the Antichrist. This person is the Antichrist. This person is this, the Antichrist, the Antichrist. This obsession with this. And it's funny to me because they never stop and ask, why does the devil need an Antichrist? You ever wonder that? Why? I've never heard one of these people actually ask that question. No intellectual curiosity. It's just a given. You have to have the Antichrist appear. And they never stop and wonder, well, why? Why does the devil need an Antichrist? It can't be to gain control of all the kingdoms of the world, because we know when Satan attempted to tempt Jesus in the desert, one of the things he offered him was what? You can rule over all the kingdoms of the world. Jesus didn't tell him you don't have those to give. So if he basically had influence over all the kingdoms of the world back then, he doesn't need an Antichrist to get influence over all the kingdoms of the world today. So why? What is the entire point? Well, to get people to fall in line. Look at the people around you. And tell me they're going to have something. Come on now. If we're understanding the Lord, part of that is we understand Satan. If we're going to understand the world around us, we understand Satan and why he does the things he does. Satan strives. He wants at his nature, in his rebellion, he wants to replace God. And to do that, he wants to prove that he can do anything God can do. And so what you get from that is he mimics the things the Lord. That's why he has to have an Antichrist, because the Lord, God Almighty, sent his son, Jesus Christ, the Christ, to the world to fulfill his plan. That's why Satan has to have an Antichrist, because he's copying God. He's trying to prove that he can do whatever God can do, but he can't. And because he can't, it always comes off as this cheap knockoff. Think of the Antichrist as the Timu Christ, you know, like the Timu version, the cheap version. Is this knockoff because he has to. He wants to prove he can do the things that God can do. So you see that path. That's why he has to have an Antichrist, because there is a Christ. So he's trying to mimic that. He's trying to prove he can do that too. He's trying to prove there's nothing that God can do that he can't do. He can do everything, because if you're going to go replace somebody, if you're at your job and you think you do a better job than your boss, and you're trying to make the appeal that your boss should be replaced by you, you got to prove that you can do all the things your boss can do. That's essentially what the devil is doing. He's trying to prove he can do anything God can do. But because he can't, you wind up with this ham-fisted, this real awkward, obvious, cheap knockoff of what the Lord. That's why there's an Antichrist, because Jesus exists. Because God did that, he has to try to do the same thing. And you'll see, when you understand this, a lot of these other things fall into place. For instance, you'll hear the term revelation of the method. I hope you're all familiar with that term, because I'm going to just roll forward with that like you do. This thing where, you know, you've probably, if nothing else, you've seen people make videos about things like, you know, oh, the Simpsons predicted this event this many years before it happened. And it was like, oh, that's because the Illuminati and the Freemasons are, you know, they're, it's prepared. I've even heard people claim that, well, they have a time machine. They have a time machine and they're going forward and they're coming back then and putting these hints in these TV shows, in these video games, predicting what's going to happen. All these things, you know, but revelation of the method. You know, is, well, because if they show us they're going to do it before they do it, then, you know, it gives them a special power. And that's close. That is not entirely, I don't entirely disagree with that. but it doesn't go deep enough into the spiritual aspect. You see, when you hear about this revelation of the method, you know, where a TV show or video game or whatever predicted this event, what did God have? If you're familiar with the Old Testament, God had his prophets. See, remember, Satan is always trying to prove he can do everything God can do. He's mimicking, he's copying God. He's trying to prove he can do whatever God can do. If God, throughout the Old Testament specifically, had all of his prophets, then what? The devil has to have prophets too. He can't claim to do all the things God can do if God had prophets and he doesn't. So he has to have his prophets. This, and like I said, because he can't do the things God can do, it always comes off as a cheap knockoff. God had the prophet Isaiah. Satan has the Simpsons. Because that's it. That's all he could do. It's like we've talked here before about how God will never interfere with man's free will. That's one of the set rules God has put in place. Not that God can't do it. I'm saying that is one of the boundaries God has set up. He will not interfere with man's free will. And yet you have people, you know, with this Calvinist view that basically we're pre-programmed for life. We're just going through the motions. Otherwise, how would God be able to predict what is going to happen? Because God exists outside of time, and we've talked about this before, but God sees where everybody, it's such an incredible thing. Man has free will. You're free to make the decisions you can make. You're making them of your own accord. God is not making you make a pre-programmed decision. You have free will. He will not interfere with that. And as an example, I stopped myself because I really want to make an example of that. And we've referenced this before. You know, Peter's miraculous escape from prison. Everybody's free will, the end result was going to be he was going to be executed. Now, if we don't have free will, or if God at certain times just interferes with our free will, he could have just had the people holding him change their mind and decide to let him go. Couldn't he? I mean, why send an angel to break him out of, to make a jailbreak? Because he's not going to interfere with free will. And that was one of the rare instances where God wanted things to come out a certain way. But with man's free will, everybody that was in place, the free will was a dead end. It's like being stuck in a loop in a bad video game, and no matter what you do, you're going to get the bad end. So God intervened directly and removed him from prison so that his will would fall into place. But that's a very, very rare exception. God can sit back with all of these countless people making their free will decisions and look at those things all and where this leads here and this leads here. And when this person decides this, that's going to cause this person to decide this. And all of these various streams, these timelines that are happening of people making all of these decisions and how they affect each other and interact with each other. And at the end of it, what he wants to happen, his will be done. All of those things fall into place like puzzle pieces. His will is done. It's extremely difficult to even wrap your mind around how, and that is how great God is, because he exists outside of time. He's looking at all of these things falling into place. Now, Satan wants his will to be done. And this is another example of how it winds up being this cheap mimicry of what God does. Because again, he's trying to prove he can do whatever God does. His rebellion is he can do a better job than God, but he's having to constantly trying to prove that. Now, God can do, as we just discussed, stand back and watch all of these things and fall into place, and God's will be done. How's Satan going to pull that off? He can't. Or he tries to, in trying to pull it off, he does a cheap mimicry of it. So God can stand back and watch all these people not interfere with their free will, make their own choices, make their own decisions. And at the end of the day, he can see how all of these pieces will fall together and his will is done. Satan, on the other hand, he wants his will to be done. Again, it's a knockoff of everything is a knockoff of what God does. That's why there's going to be an Antichrist, because there's a Christ. He's got to prove. Can't stand back and say, I should replace God, but, you know, these things God could do, I can't do that, but still I should replace him. That doesn't make any sense. He's trying to prove all the time. He can do that. I can do that. God has prophets. I got prophets. Look, I put it, you know, I had these Hollywood people put that in a movie before it ever happened. See? Now, where God could stand back and see all these people making their decisions and everything falls into place, his will is done. So how does Satan do that? Well, he too doesn't interfere with our free will. He tries to influence our free will. You know, or he tries to influence us. I've said this before. I'll say it again. You'll always have a choice. He'll make it as difficult as he can. He'll do everything he can to deceive you, to trick you, to pull the wool over your eyes. But it will always be your choice in the end if it has to do with the devil. Now, sometimes men just of their own evil nature will do things to you where you literally have no choice. Then you're just a victim. That doesn't have anything to do with the devil. If it's from Satan, there will be a choice. He will make it difficult. He will try to influence you, trick you, deceive you, tempt you, everything in the world. But at the end of the day, you do have to have a choice. That's how the game works as it is. He can't accuse you if you didn't have a choice. So what the devil does, where God stands back and watches, you know, he could see all men making their free choices and everything falls into place. Satan wants X to happen, whatever X is. There's something Satan wants to transpire. So what he does is he lies, he deceives, he influences, he manipulates. And does all of these things, because again, he can't just sit back and watch people make their decisions. He doesn't have that ability, but he's trying to. He's trying to prove he can do whatever God does. So what he has to do, again, the cheap knockoff version, he has to sit there and manipulate people and trick them and tempt them and get people to take the wrong path. And when it works out, they wind up doing, at the end of the day, he accomplishes his will. And he's basically, you can imagine him standing back going, see, just like God's will is done, my will is done. Only it's laughably short of what God can do. He has to go through all of these other motions because at the end of the day, he's not capable of what God is able to do. When you hear about revelation of the method, predictive programming, whatever you want to call it, at the end of the day, if you dig down far enough to its fundamental nature, and I'm not saying that certain peoples and groups aren't involved with that. I'm saying that's not the root of it. That's just yet another layer that you dig. If you were to dig through past that, yes, there's another layer past that. It's spiritual at its fundamental nature. Revelation of the method, predictive program. Well, God has his prophets. Satan's got to have his too. He can't have God having stuff that he doesn't have. He has his prophets. God had Isaiah. Satan has Freemasons, Illuminati, whoever you choose, whichever group you choose. I just find it funny that people will hit one of that and they think that's the ultimate answer. You know, it's the Jews, it's the Masons, it's the Illuminati, whatever you people's answer. And they act like that's the end of it. There's another layer. Don't stop digging. You know, why? Because God has his prophets. Satan wants to have his. He can't have God being proving, showing that he does things that he can't do. Satan's pride is beyond what we can even comprehend. It's the extreme. He has to prove he wants, if God does it, he's going to have some knockoff version of it. So he can say he does that too. He can do that too. Now, I was talking earlier about, you know, these evangelicals that act like Jesus Christ is a checklist. And if you check everything off the list, he's got to do what he's got to do. You know, I occasionally play video games. You know, I'm not one of these people that, you know, spends hours and hours playing video games. But once in a while, I'll play video games on occasion. And, you know, there's certain type of games that if you want to unlock an event in the video game, you have to meet certain conditions. You know, you have to make certain choices in the game or accomplish certain missions. Just depends on what kind of game it is. But to unlock an event, you have to fulfill these certain conditions. And I think it's so funny these evangelical types act like the return of Jesus Christ is that. It's a video game, and we want Jesus to return, so we have to unlock the events. We have to check off all the boxes. We have to do these certain things. And Satan, of course, uses that to his advantage. Of course he does. They support Israel. Why? Because that's one of the check boxes. If we do this, we're going to make Jesus come back. I ain't even sure why they want Jesus to come back. Because, I mean, understand, when Jesus does do this, when he takes the lid off the box, and I'm going to get into that here in a minute because it's a good point to bear down on. That's it. There's no more time for getting it right. These people are way away in their own pride and their own arrogance. They think they've got, they're where they need to be. They think they've got the answers. We got to check off the box. We've got everything figured out. We're where we're supposed to be as Christian believers. Now we just need Jesus to show up and prove us right. When Jesus returns, the time for repentance is over. It's done. Time ends. This is the key element of understanding the return of Jesus Christ, not falling for false Christ, not falling for the devil's lies. There is a theory out there, and I'm open to the idea. One of the things they're going to do is they're going to pull off some sort of fake space alien thing and try to convince everybody that actually all the religions in the world have to do with space aliens. Jesus was some sort of space alien, and this is the return of Christ. And a bunch of morons are going to fall for it. After the whole COVID nonsense, I'm not sure there's anything people won't fall for. And the way you're not going to fall for that is understand this. No matter how convincing a story they create, no matter how real a narrative may be, this is how you never fall for it. When you understand that what Jesus Christ returning is going to signify is the end of time. He's going to pull the lid off the, I always say that, pull the lid off the box. And that means that time will no longer exist. If time still exists, then that ain't Jesus. I don't care if they're presenting some space alien or some narrative, some bullshit. If you look around and you're thinking, you're tempted, you're like, well, everybody's telling me, all these, you know, theological scholars are telling me that this is real. This is it. Now we have the answers. You know, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, all of them were actually a part of these space aliens or whatever narrative they decide to create. And everybody's falling in line with it. Look around, ask yourself, does time still exist? Because I'm 100%, if time still exists, that ain't Jesus. When Jesus returns, time stops. He literally shuts the system down. If time still exists, then that ain't it. It's a deception. And when that happens, we're out of time. I say this before. One of the things that sets us apart as Christian believers is we strive for something that in this life we're not going to reach. We're striving for a level we can't reach, but we strive for it anyway. You know, we will never be done looking at ourselves, critiquing ourselves, you know, understanding ourselves, our spiritual nature, gaining wisdom, knowledge, and understanding in the Lord and spiritual growth, we're never going to be done with that until this life is over. When our time runs out, you see, it's the same end result. When you die, time is over for you. When Jesus returns and just literally ends the concept of time itself, it's the same ending. The day of the Lord will come for you when you die, because you're done with time. Or on the other side, when Jesus intervenes and just shuts the whole system down and removes the element of time itself, it's the same. You see, you've arrived at the same point. What I'm trying to get to is these people that are clamoring for Jesus to check off these boxes, create these events, make Jesus show up, they're striving for their own demise. Because they're demonstrating they really don't have any understanding of what they're supposed to even be doing here. And they're striving for something that if it were to occur, when it occurs, you're out of time. Everything you got wrong, you don't have time to figure it out, to fix it, to correct it. That's why we're here. That's what we spend this life doing constantly. When we breathe our last, we've run out of time. You know, I've heard people that say, you know, this silly notion. They will sit there and say, well, yeah, your religion's so lame. People just do whatever they want to, and then on their deathbed, they can say they accept Jesus, and none of it matters. But it does. That's just a non-understanding of how this all works and what the purpose of it is. This is why, look, you don't want to wait until the last minute to try to come to Jesus, because you've still run out of time. You had this time to, you know, it demonstrates a lack of sincerity. If I'm getting a little off on a tangent here, but this whole segment's kind of turned into a rambling anyway. Hopefully it's at least an informative and interesting rambling. You spend your whole life being a godless heathen and rejecting the Lord, chasing your own worldly desires. That's how you choose to live your life. Those are your choices. You get diagnosed with a terminal disease. You have 6 months to live. And at first you say, well, that's how it is. You know, it'll just be the end. That's no big deal. But then as the time rolls by, now you have 3 months to live, 2 months to live, and you're getting sicker. And now it's getting scary. You're not going to be here anymore. And then say at the last minute, you think, well, I'm going to hedge my bets. I'll say I believe in Jesus, because they're telling me that if I say I believe in Jesus, then I'm saved. But the reality, you know, you can't fool God. And the reality is, if you weren't diagnosed with a terminal disease, you'd have kept on living like you were. In other words, all you really God knows the truth. And at the end of the day, all you're really demonstrating is a fear of consequences. You know, it's like you can be at the bar and you drinking and you having a big time. But then the tab is due. Then the bartender, it's like it's getting late. It's time to pay off your tab. You try to avoid that part. That's the part nobody wants. You've demonstrated these are the choices. And if you weren't diagnosed with a serious, your life-ending disease, you were just going to keep on trucking like you were. You're not going to fool God and trick him. And even if you're sincere, now you're faced with the fact that at the end of the day, you still squandered all that time. You squandered it. You had all of this time where you were supposed to be learning about him and growing and spiritually maturing so that you were ready to be birthed into the next life complete, or at least healthy and complete enough to move on then and start your growth at the next phase. And you squandered all that. And you can't. You can't get it back. When Jesus returns, we're done. All of us. You, me, every godless heathen around us. All the wicked, all the evil. We're all done. what we've done with our lives is what we've done. There's no more. We're done with this stage. And these people running around acting like they can check off enough boxes and make Jesus hurry up and return, because they're already there in their minds. What this reflects is how little they know. And I'm not meaning to sound arrogant. They actually believe that they've done what they need to do, and they just need Christ to hurry up and return and prove them right. Just what's he waiting on? What's he waiting on? Why am I having to wait? It's reflective, I think, of a certain amount of arrogance. Why is Jesus making me wait? We need to rush him along. He needs a little prodding. Does the servant prod his master? No, the servant shuts the hell up and does what he's supposed to be doing and patiently waits on his master. There's a notion that, well, I've got it all for you. I mean, why else would you want Jesus to hurry up and return? I've done what I need to do. Hurry up and get back here. Hurry up and show up here so I can be proven right and I can be elevated up. People can see what a good person I am. You're never going to run out of things to learn, spiritual growth, seeking wisdom, knowledge, understanding of the Lord. You're not going to run out of that. You're not going to learn it all in this life. I don't care who you are, how you live. It's not possible. You're just trying to get enough of it figured out where you spiritually are mature enough that you're ready to be born into the next step. Ironically, in a way, these people are, what they're seeking is their own demise, because they obviously haven't got it figured out. When you know what you're supposed to be doing, I find this a comfort. I know a lot of this stuff is repetitive. I've mentioned it before. And I'm kind of conscious of that. I feel like I should be bringing up something new and breathtaking. But alas, when you see all the craziness, you reel yourself back in and you remind yourself, okay, what am I supposed to be doing? And I think one of the best things anybody remembers, you only have control over yourself. What am I supposed to be doing? We know what we're supposed to be doing. Get back to it. It's fine to look out and see all the craziness going on. The world around us is on fire. That's all fine. We need to be aware of our surroundings and act accordingly. But at the end of the day, God's intention for man, for you and me, is the same as it ever was. We got to get back to it. Seeking wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, and looking around at the world burning around us can be a part of that. We understand how it all falls together, like we were talking about earlier. You know, understanding that Satan is doing, he has to copy, he's trying to prove he can do everything God can do when he can't. So it's this knockoff version. He has to tempt people and trick them and manipulate them and give them false narratives so that they will make the decision that's going to end up being what he wants. God doesn't have to do that. God can sit there and watch everybody make their decisions, and he understands the puzzle pieces are going to fall together. His will is done back here. You know, but our job is, when we come back to what are we supposed to be doing, well, we're supposed to be seeking wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Well, we get back to it. I find it reassuring that God only requires of us that which is possible. I had this, I just looked down and I had that jotted down here. Never forget, as believers, he doesn't require anything more of us than what we can actually do. He's not going to require the impossible of us. When we look in the Bible, nowhere, or I don't want to put this, God is never going to require you. Let's back it up here. For instance, God is not going to require you to convince anybody. He doesn't ever require you to change their mind. Get out there and change those people's mind. You got to convince them. Because you see people and they're on a mission. I got to make people understand. I got to shake them and make them understand. Make sure this sinks in. But that's not how God works. So that's not how we as believers need to work. That's not the attitude we need to have. We're not required to do beyond that which is possible for us to do. Again, in the Old Testament, he would send his prophets out, and sometimes he'd tell them, the prophets would be like, well, I'll go tell them what you said, Lord, but I'm gonna tell you right now that they're not gonna believe it, and God would tell the prophet, "Yeah, I know." But you need to tell them so that they can't claim nobody warned us. This is a part of it. It has to be done. You're right. They're not gonna believe it, but you got to go do it anyway. So telling, isn't it? Be the prophet, and you got to go tell these people. God's already said, yeah, you're right. They're not going to believe you, but you got to go do it anyway. It's got to be done. You know, he never told the prophet, no. You've got to convince them. That's your job. Jesus never, he would debate for the audience, for the sake of the audience, but he never went chasing after people to try to convince them. You know, when he showed up at a place and the people were like, man, I don't really believe this guy, he'd just move on to the next place. He never went chasing after when he'd tell the people something they didn't like hearing and they all turn around and start wandering off because they were just here to see some miracles. He never went chasing after the crowd going, wait, hear me out. We're not required to convince anybody. We have a requirement and a duty to the truth. We don't have a duty or a requirement to make people accept it. And yet, time and time again, you'll see people chasing around, trying to just, wait, I got to make these people hear me. I got to make them understand. No, you don't. You got to give them the information. You got to tell them the truth. And that's it. That's as far as God requires us, because we don't have control over other people. God does not require the impossible from us. At the end of the day, we have a job. We know what it is. To seek him out, spiritually mature, to constantly be looking at ourselves and improving ourselves. And we improve ourselves as we come to greater and greater knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of the Lord. That's it. That is our central purpose. We seek the truth. We don't have to run around and convince everybody. We don't have to change anybody's mind, because we can't. We only have power over ourselves. Anyway, we could keep going. We'll stop there, I guess. I was going to make a point of, talking about how the spiritual nature, what we see around us. And it always, I find it humorous, the commonality. You know, you read in the Old Testament, and the people go chasing after Satan. Yes, that was what they were doing. There was always this commonality, this element of child sacrifice. We all know about, the burning of the children to Baal, which means they burned them alive. And you see it today. And when you hear these stories implying, when the people talking about, these rulers, these rich people, these billionaires, whatever, and rumors of ritualistic child sacrifice, the reason those stick true is because it fits the pattern. That's what they did thousands of years ago. It's the same pattern. That child sacrifice is the same pattern. And yes, abortion is a part of that too. It's a form of widespread child sacrifice. Kill your child. What is it? When people sacrificed, burned their children alive to Baal, they did so because they believed they would be more economically prosperous. They have abortion today. I said I wasn't going to get off into this, and I'm getting off into it anyway. When they have abortion today, what do they say? Well, you can't afford a child right now. It'll be more economic. It's the same promise. And it, as usual, the devil doesn't deliver. It's a lie, but you do the child sacrifice and what do? They abort these babies and sell the body parts for science or whatever twisted purposes. They sell the body parts. It's a commodity. And just to add insult to the injury and the lie that you're doing this because you'll be economically better off, they sell your infant's body parts and they don't even give you a cut. Like, it ain't like, well, if you have your abortion and we sell the chunks of your baby, we'll give you a kickback. We'll give you 20%, 50% of whatever we make. No, they just keep all the money. It's truly sick. Very sick. Then they take these baby parts and do all sorts of weird shit, you know. They put it in beauty creams and stuff. You know, you're smearing dead human parts on you because you think it'll make you look younger, prettier. That's a bit of a tangent at the end that I didn't even intend to get off on, but you see that pattern. The child sacrifice thing is also one of the patterns. Again, we know this is reflective, that this is all spiritual. Everything you're seeing is spiritual in nature. There's a spiritual element to it. And as always, if you don't understand the spiritual element, you're not going to understand what's going on. Anyway, like I said, I'll stop myself there. Otherwise, we'll ramble on. I appreciate you joining this week. Hope you enjoyed the entirety of the show. Hope you got something out of it. Again, appreciate you stopping by. And I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.